Jared.
Good morning, Bob.
Well, first we begin with an exhibit at the Massachusetts College of Art and Design that's through March 8th. I don't think I've ever been there, Scholar.
And I have to tell you, this is the first time that I had been there, and there is every reason to go. They have two shows right now, and the first is Allison Saar, and this is what I'll be talking about because I saw the other one before it had opened. And I should point out that Mass College of Art and Design has a terrific gallery space. They pointed out to me that it is equivalent to what the ICA has, and the best thing about Mass Art is that admission is free.
Wow.
And right now, there is every reason to see Allison Saar still. That's the name of her show. Allison Saar is an artist in California, spent a lot of time growing up here in on the East Coast in New York. Her mother, by the way, is the artist Betty Saar, for people who might know her. She is a woman who creates large-scale sculpture, and it is largely taken from experiences that she's had growing up. She's an African-American woman, now in her late 50s, and she's also a fair-skinned African-American woman, often perceived as white, she says. So she's had a very peculiar viewpoint into bigotry and how she's seen it. But she told me that how growing up in that way influenced her work and perspective.
I, you know, literally had to choose whether to eat on, you know, one side of school or the other side of school because it was still very divided. I mean, not because of segregation, but just because, you know, everybody wanted to hang out with their own. So, you know, for me, I was always kind of this weird in between two worlds, and all my friends in high school were all the other sort of misfits, mongrels and misfits. And so we kind of sat literally between the two groups. So, you know, so that was kind of a hard sort of reckoning for me to kind of really find my footing.
And she absolutely found her footing. That's what you see in this show still. You see these, as I mentioned, large-scale sculptures. One of the most evocative pieces for me was you see this young African-American girl, again, life-size, sitting on a swing, until you start to look at the whole piece and you realize she's actually not sitting on a swing. She's sitting on a scale. And you see the, sort of the elements that are trying to balance that out. I mean, she's a woman who creates these very, very interesting, hard-hitting, very powerful and emotional sculptures. There's, and a lot of them are participatory as well. There's one piece that is in response to a lot of the bigotry she saw, the hate speech and hate conversation and dialogue she saw around President Obama. And she talked to me about how even current events in media and what she's reading affects her artistic instincts.
I was just really angry about the way Obama was being treated in the media. And it's just like, oh my God, you know, there is still so much racism and issues of racism that needs to be dealt with in this country. And, you know, a lot of us felt that this is a great success, that we have, you know, biracial African-American man in the office, but there was still just so much really unresolved ugliness that was still out there. So, you know, that, you know, even though we can have a black man as president, you know, there's still lots of people that feel that their only worthwhile work is janitorial or in sports.
Well, how does that feeling, Jared, translate into her art?
Very powerfully, and specifically in the piece called Black Lightning. And she, as she just mentioned, she's seen this conversation still. She feels even in this day and age that there are a lot of people who believe, even though we're in the Obama era, that a lot of African-Americans are only worthwhile in entertainment or janitorial capacities. So she's created this piece, Black Lightning, in which you see a wash basin, and above it is a pair of boxing gloves, and to the side is a mop. So evoking, again, suggesting either janitor or entertainer. And I had mentioned just as before we heard that clip about how this piece, a lot of her pieces are participatory because she wants you to have some sort of engagement and understanding of your interaction with this dialogue that she's having and the piece in particular. So with Black Lightning, what you do is you squeeze this pump and you see this red fluid move up from the wash basin. It comes up through, down through the boxing gloves, and it's a red fluid, so it looks like blood bleeding out of the wrists of the boxing gloves.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. Allison Saar, Still, is the name of the exhibit at the Massachusetts College of Art and Design through March the 8th. Next, we turn to a topic that's kind of fascinated me, especially with the internet age that we're all involved in, and that the topic is the future of the museum.
Well, this is a terrific series that the Boston Athenaeum has put together. And the first session in this series was just held on Monday night, and it was the future of the museum basically at large. And they convened the gods of the museum world. It was the head of the MFA, Malcolm Rogers. It was the head of the Metropolitan Museum in New York, which, of course, is the largest museum in the world, and the head of the Getty Trust in Los Angeles. Really? So these three giants came together to talk about the future of the museum in a discussion. And I should point out that there will be three of these sessions. They're all sold out. They sold out immediately. However, the Boston Athenaeum is streaming them. The next discussion is held on February 10th about technology, and that should be great. They have this great person from Google, and they have another one about governments on February 24th. But what came out of the discussion on Monday was really, really fascinating, including something I thought was pretty revelatory. Malcolm Rogers, again, the MFA director, talked about how there's a retreating now from the blockbuster. And since the 1980s, blockbuster shows, whether it's Monet or Mario Testino, the big blockbuster shows that they can do tons of marketing around. They get people to line up around the museum. He said that's going away. Here's what he had to say about it.
Something I welcome is a movement away from blockbusters. It's nice to have a blockbuster, but to be dependent on them isn't a good idea. Exhibitions are becoming smaller and more varied, which I think is a good idea. But also, I think we're all trying to invest more in what we call our permanent collections and not to let an exhibition suck all the energy or rather the resources out of the museum. How do we give our gallery, our public galleries, the magnetism, the excitement of a temporary exhibition?
Uh-huh. Now, there's also, I guess, some controversy about, borrowing works from other museums or lending them, right?
Yeah, this has become quite controversial. It's standard practice for museums and has been to loan out pieces. But these masterworks were not meant to travel. So there's a great risk associated with having them travel. And usually it's internationally. There's also concern about if you have major masterworks in your museum, those are the iconic pieces that first of all, your local audience goes to see and then tourists go to see. And what happens when they go to see those pieces and they're gone? And why are they gone? Well, a lot of museums are accepting a great deal of money to loan out these pieces. The MFA had some controversy a while back for loaning out pieces to a gallery in a Las Vegas casino. I actually support that because I think we can't say that Las Vegas audiences are lesser than and they don't deserve to see it because they're not in a big city. But that issue did come up this week, and that was where you did see some tension. Of course, the museums with the bigger endowments saying, we would never do this. You can only loan for scholarship. You can't loan for cash. And you had Malcolm Rogers saying, but you know what? It's going to help my operational costs.
Well, will people stop going to museums because they can see masterworks on the internet?
That came up as well. It was the head of the Met who said they now have to consider their annual audience, the people who actually physically walk into the museum, as much as they have to consider their audience online at this point. So things are shifting dramatically.
Okay, next we turn to a movie, Labor Day, that opens in theaters tomorrow.
Yeah, and I have to tell you, Bob, this is a little bit weird because we've already seen a lot of reviews because it was supposed to open before Christmas. They don't like it. I do. I'm the exception here. This is a movie based on Joyce Maynard's novel, where Kate Winslet is a woman in 1987. She's agoraphobic. She has this wonderful relationship with her son. She only goes out once a month to do some shopping. Josh Brolin is an escaped convict. He forces himself upon her and forces her to take him home so he can sort of hide out for a couple of days. And it's a sort of a demented storyline because what he does is he fills this absence in the family. He sort of becomes the boy's father. He becomes the lover, the husband that Kate Winslet's character never has. It's sort of the Martha Stewart school of hostage taking because he makes a good pie for her. He makes chili. This is directed by Jason Reitman, who's done Young Adult, some other sardonic pieces like Up in the Air. And it's a different piece for him. But with these three actors, the feeling, the emotion that you get in this piece really does work.
And, of course, we have to tell people Open Studio is on tomorrow night at 8:30 on WGBH2.
Yeah, you can see more of the work of Alison Starr, and you'll see get more of a preview from Downton Abbey's Alan Leach, who plays Tom Branson.
Really? Cool. Okay, thank you, Jared Bowen. We'll see you next Thursday.
Thanks, Bob.